The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
My name is Gary Kramer. I'm a freelance writer for the Philadelphia Gay News, among other publications. And the idea of taking a cross-country trip with tonight's guest, John Waters, is certainly an appealing prospect to me. It would be a great opportunity to get into a lengthy discussion with the fabulous cult filmmaker. We would talk about our favorite authors, like James Purdy. We could continue our ongoing debate about the films by Bruno Dumont. And I would be keen to just have some extended quality time with my celebrity role model. While many fans recognize John Waters for his appearance in Seed of Chucky or for creating Hairspray, I will always appreciate him for Pink Flamingos and Serial Mom. Pussy Willow. And while I will probably never hitchhike, I would go hitchhiking with John Waters. I imagine it to be grandly romantic, as in exciting and mysterious, the kind Veronica Lake and Joel McRae had in Sullivan's Travels. I expect we might be more like the Beats, Kerouac and Cassidy, going on the road. I would have Waters, my filth elder, teach me the ways of the world. As I imagine these road trips, dutifully acknowledging that my idea of roughing it is no cable television, I was amused to read Waters' imagined scenarios about hitchhiking west along Route 70 from his home in Baltimore to his apartment in San Francisco. This is the basis for his terrific new book, Car Sick. In the book's two novellas, Waters takes readers on some strange trips. He imagines the best and worst of all possible rides. They include meeting fans and even actors from his films, as well as everything from his fantasy sexual encounters to a nightmarish encounter with a goiter. I'm still nauseated by that episode. But it's Waters' real journey, told in the nonfiction section of Car Sick, its best showcase of his talents as a magnificent storyteller. Full of funny and frightening moments, Waters confessed to me in a recent interview, "I'm shocked I did them." Well, Waters has long been out to shock. He even published a book entitled Shock Value, which never went out of print and is available for sale in the lobby, along with Car Sick. He proves that he's still out to shock and entertain his fans in this new book, and I'm certain he will do that this evening. Tonight, John Waters will be interviewed by Wesley Stace, the best-selling author of four novels, including the very recent Wonder Kid. He's also known by the rock and roll pen name John Wesley Harding, and is the founder and host of Cabinet of Wonders' radio variety show. Please welcome Mr. John Waters and Wesley Stace.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hello.
All right, here we are, just like Hillary. Right?
Bit of...
I thought it was her book sounds like a porn parody, kind of. Hard choices.
I'm not doing a first question. It's happening. You have a fantastic new book out called Car Sick. Everybody understand, people in these situations always give a boring recap. Does everybody know what the book's about?
It's a high concept.
Dispense with that. But the book, one interesting thing, of course, is that the book comes in three bits. The first is before the hitchhiking, you envision how good it can be.
15 the best rides that I could imagine.
And then you imagine the next novella, if you like, is how bad it can be.
15 worse, and when I think worse, I can go pretty far. Right?
Although, actually, the good is kind of funny,
well, my
too.
My assistant said, I can't tell the difference.
And then the third bit is what actually happened.
Yeah.
Reality.
Yes.
And there's there's a moment when you say that, you know, reality is never as exciting as fiction or something.
It's never as extreme.
So tell us, when you came up with the idea for the book Carsick, did you already have that idea in your head of good and bad and good?
And I knew that my nightmare was that I would sell the book, and then the first ride I would step outside in Baltimore and someone would pick me up and say, oh, I'm going to San Francisco, get in. So then I would have had to escape that ride, which would have been okay. Right. But no, because hitchhiking is such a fantasy. It's always sexual. It's always dangerous. It is almost a genre of literature and movies about hitchhiking, and it's become romantic. I used to go on hitchhiking dates when I was younger. So I wanted to imagine it, and I still do that.
And with Patty Hearst, you were.
Yeah, I did go with Patty Hearst. But I knew, though, that I had to write those two parts before I left. And after I really did hitchhike across the country by myself, I realized I could have never written those first two parts because it was imagining what it was going to be like. And after I did it, I knew what it was going to be like. So I wouldn't have had those extremes. And yes, in real life, the people that did pick me up were the opposite of extreme. My whole life, I have fled the middle. I'm great in jail. I'm great in Cannes. I'm just bad in a shopping mall. But these were people that were supposedly normal people, but they've changed normal people. Normal people now are so unjudgmental and so open to, as long as you don't take yourself too seriously and have humor and work. What people don't like in America is people that don't work. That's the only thing I found prejudice against. But Republicans, Democrats, they all were open-minded. Now, maybe this is just Republicans and Democrats who pick up hitchhikers. That is a certain type of person who believes in the goodness of people, takes a chance, is adventuresome, has a sense of humor, and generally has recovered from something. I think I found that a lot, that people had done one thing and then changed and overcome that and become. Mostly, I would say every kind picked me up, single women, a preacher's wife, a truck driver, a cop. But all the heterosexual men that picked me up, and as far as I know, no gay people picked me up, which I found strange, kind of. Well, I couldn't tell. I didn't get in the car and say, hey, got any gay ID? You know,
somebody did invite you to sleep in their truck.
Yeah, but I don't know that that was a come-on. You know, I mean, I would have. It would have been good for the book, but he had scabs and flip-flops. But beggars can't be choosers. And that night, I almost saw the little place in the rest area where I would have almost had to sleep. And I told him I was going to sleep there if it got dark. But so each time I imagined this, but the people were so kind and great, but they were not extreme in any way. And so it was comforting to just see how these people, and they didn't all recognize me at all. I mean, I'd say maybe a third did. And most of the people that recognized me drove past me and said, well, is that John? Why would he be standing in Kansas on a ramp? You know, and most people thought I was a homeless person, and I was sort of. Yeah. I mean, I was faux homeless. Yeah.
Well, two things. One is I decided not to read any interviews with you or read any reviews of the book before we did this because I thought it'd be more interesting for both of us. But also, when I did read one thing, and it was like the tenor of the beginning of the review, which I stopped reading, was, oh my goodness, who would think John Waters was a compassionate person and this book is filled with compassion, which made me rather annoyed because I just thought, if your movies aren't compassionate about various people from all kinds of societies, that's one thing I'd like you to address. And the other is, I can't remember, so go with that one.
Well, I think my movies, all the books that I've written, I'm never mean-spirited, so no one gets mad at anything I say anymore. My sister always says, hey, get away with saying that shit, you know? But I think it's because I'm not mean-spirited. I make fun of things that I love, actually. So all the people that picked me up hitchhiking, I couldn't make fun of them. They saved my life in a way. Mm. Each time they picked me up, I feel like they rescued me. Because when you're standing there for 10 hours one day, I stood but no one picked me up, you feel this great despair that it's going to take forever. But when they pick you up, I never had a bad driver. Maybe I just was less judgmental. You know, you can't wait for 10 hours and get in the car and say, slow down, look out, oh my God, you know how to drive? You know, you can't do that. But I didn't have a bad driver.
Well, one of the reasons that you're picking up, I would think, and I'm sure some of the audience would agree, one of the reasons you're possibly picking up people who are a bit more non-judgmental and open to things is because of some of the kinds of things that have developed with the movies that you've made and the change of
attitude.
I don't think so.
Because
when you look back at something like, you know, Pink Flamingos or Mondo Trash or whatever, now that whole thing is a thing that people are into. When you made it, it was only you and some freaks in Athens.
People, they didn't. They even the ones that vaguely knew who I was, they maybe heard of Hairspray or something. They never asked me, so what's Johnny Depp like? They didn't care. They never asked me a celebrity question at all. And I wanted to hear about their life. I wanted to hear about the farmer's life. I wanted to hear about the coal miner's life. Now, I would ask wrong questions. I said to the coal miners, what'd you think of that last year when all those people were killed in that mine and everything?
He said,
do you think I watched that? I had to go down there every day. I had three kids. I didn't look at that. But they weren't interested in that, really. Only one woman, the preacher's wife, the second ride, she recognized me and was asking questions. I felt like I went into my nightclub act, really. But being a hitchhiker in a car is like being a phone sex worker. The longer you talk, the longer you stay in the car.
Right.
So you got to keep talking. And they were great. I mean, your job is to talk. I mean, I can't always imagine what it'll be like to get in a car when you're hitchhiking and the other person just doesn't talk the whole time. You'd really be scared. You'd think something's the matter.
So,
your job is to talk.
If someone's picking up a hitchhiker, they are 99% likely to want to talk to that hitchhiker or have someone to talk to, right?
They want to tell their story, maybe, or they want to hear your story. But yes, they want to talk. It's part of your job. I always thought before I left that somebody would say, oh, I'm tired, would you drive? Which I would have. Nobody ever asked that. Nobody ever asked me for money, but I did offer money, and people, nobody took it except one let me fill up their tank because they didn't have any money. But and people were very proud about that, and not about not taking money. And people tried to give me money. The first farmer, when he pulled over, and he had asked me what I did for a living, and I said I was a film director, and I could tell he thought I said I'm Napoleon, you know, right? That he did not believe for 1 minute. This poor old guy has off his meds with delusions of grandeur, right? And when he stopped, he took out his wallet and tried to give me a $10 bill. And I didn't know what he was doing at first. I thought, I'm not hustling, right? What do I got to do for that, right? But then I realized he was just being very kind, and I didn't take it. But another woman in a rest area, when I was standing there, and she was walking her dog with her kids, came over and gave me a 20. I said, no, and she would not leave until I took it. So I later gave it to another weary traveler to pass along. But people were very kind. It was amazing how great they were.
And, you know, as with Shock Value, you're using the book also as another way to do what you did with, like, the 101 things I hate and 100 fun things I love in the Shock Value. What you're doing is kind of, you're able to satirize things you don't want to happen to you, and you're able to, like, the good section is filled with great B-movie situations.
Well, I pick up, you know, if I'm going to talk about somebody, you know, in a car, I picked up a film buff that agreed with me and like certain kind of movies I could talk about and everything. And in the nightmare section, I have a fan that refuses to speak to me in anything but dialogue from my movies.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen, and it's fun for 5 minutes, but the next day it's really on your nerves.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I took some real life. I have a thing where I have I have sex in a demolition derby race in the car. I would do that. I mean, I haven't, but I would. And you know, you always have to keep some fantasies. I join a carnival where I'm in a freak show of see a man with no tattoos, and that's me. And At one point, I'm strapped to a wheel where the knife master is blindfolded and throws hatchets at me. And I think, I would like that. That's an extreme show business I've never been in, right? So I'm imagining really extreme situations I'd like to be in. I meet a driver that is a Juicy Fruit candy truck delivered. The whole thing is filled with Juicy Fruits, but he has the green kind that have been discontinued that I like. And he takes me to an outlaw truck stop that I make up. But there is such a thing as them. But there's a stripper named Fumbelina there that's... every time you give her the money, she drops it and bends over and you can look up her skirt. These are characters that would have been in my movie, certainly. I can picture this as a movie. A lot of it is short movies.
It seems like a lot of short movies put together. Yeah. And do you think that... there's some quite sweet bits in the book where you've predicted things will go either very, very badly... or very, very well, and then reality happens, and somebody does quote one of your lines at you, which puts you in the situation of going, and he did that, rather like the guy in the nightmare chapter, but this was cool.
Yeah, and then I had one, I envisioned this horrible animal rescuer who had all these trapped dogs because she believed that even being in a love relationship with another human was animal abuse, if you leave your pet home. So she had all these cages and she has tapeworms that are coming out of her mouth and everything, and I imagined this, and then a real animal rescuer did pick me up who was really lovely and really nice. So I said, God, I've already, written a mean thing about what you do for a living. She was great. That family came to the signing in Baltimore last night. And the Here We Go Magic, the rock group that picked me up, they came in New York. So I'm still in touch with some of the people that picked me up.
Which is, of course, how a lot of us first heard about, had any inkling of this, is because...
Here We Go Magic. They
picked you, the rock band picked you up.
And I didn't tell anybody. It was never announced I was doing it, and I never confirmed I was doing it until the trip was over and I made it. And... they said, can we tweet? I said, sure, it's your car. And they did, and the story went viral so fast. It was shocking that the next day I saw online a company, and I was shocked at this, was manufacturing a hitchhiking bag with my sign on it and selling it for $19.95. And I was flattered, but I thought, well, you could have sent me one. They didn't send me one. Right. So I was amazed by that, and that's what happened with the internet. Things go so crazy and so fast. But it never really helped me, because once they let me off, I was just standing on some corner. I didn't know where I was, on Route 70, where I say, fans, come get me. Where? They live like 3,000 miles away. By the time they came, I'd be somewhere else. So it never really helped me, except when I was stuck in Kansas, and I was in a rest area that had no fast food. It just had... bathrooms in the park, and there was no cars there, so every time somebody would come into the bathroom, I'd run and stand outside the bathroom waiting for them, which I realized really didn't work. Because I really, when they come out of the bathroom, standing there.
You were so desperate, you stood outside a bathroom waiting for somebody to finish his business for a long
time.
And
he was in there a long time. I realized he had like diarrhea or something, so he really did not feel like a meet and greet right afterwards. Yeah. And then I was bored. I'd play a game when people got out in rest areas. I'd play by their expression if they were number one or number two. They were going to, and I could tell by how long they were in there. And that would prove it. It's a little bathroom game you can play sometimes.
So you're John Waters. You're on the edges. There's various.
They didn't know. They just looked like some bathroom pervert standing there, right?
But there's, various charming scenes where you discover what, Ruby Tuesdays is, which you're not sure enough. You go to an Applebee's and you see the normal overweight people.
I went to Walmart, which was...
You were very scared by Walmart.
Well, because I buy a single leaf of arugula. I don't buy, bulk stuff, Where are the salespeople? It's so big in here. And it was also... It also was in a... army base town, so it was all soldiers, so it was like the porno Walmart for me. It's all handsome soldiers in Walmart. I thought, get me out of here. Yeah.
Is there an element? I want to link this to one particular chapter in the novel, and it is a nasty chapter. It's when you have visited upon you basically the murder of that Lycans
woman. Oh, well,
that's
a case I wrote about in Shock Value, a terrible
right.
case.
And so we don't need to actually talk about the case except to say it's a horrible murder. Unless
well,
it
was Gertrude Banaszewski, a famous murder in Indianapolis where she took in foster children and tortured them with her own children. Terrible case, but I wrote about it a lot. I wrote it about Kate Millett's book about it called The Basement in my first book. So this time I'm hitchhiking, I get in, and it's her daughter, freed from prison, and a man dressed as her mother, and they've come to torture me for making fun of them in my book.
It's a nasty and rather moving chapter in its own way. Is there an element...
It's moving?
Yeah, it is. Well, because what
the
you...
The first time that's been called that, right,
well,
yeah. Thank you.
What you're doing with is you're identifying with the victim of a horrific murder.
Well, I felt bad because I did have a cake. You know, they carved on that chest of that person, I am a prostitute and proud of it. Now, that's a sentence in real life on a chest. It's a long novel, yeah. Right? And so they write on mine, I'm an asshole and proud of it, which is, and they like it because it's one letter longer, and then they add an exclamation point just to get back at me.
Is that the same thing, you envisioning that situation, as you fearing judgment from America as you're driving through it from edge to edge?
No, I don't fear judgment of America usually, but I do feel that I've changed, like when you write about crime and you write about, in Role Models, I have a very serious chapter about Leslie Van Houten, one of the Manson women that is my friend that looks back on it and horror. And I apologize in there for really dedicating Pink Flamingos to the Manson family and all, because I realized how terrible it was for the victims and everything. It took me a while to figure that out, but that punk rock attitude. So I think it was the same thing. In my first book, I did like this book so much that I had a book party, and the cake had on it, I'm a prostitute and proud of it, the bakery put on it, and I had her painting done. So I did go a little too far on it. And they knew about that, and they were punishing me for doing that, which is a little fair. I might have deserved something, not this.
But there is certainly an element of kind of, you know, self-critique in that.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, and I found that, you know, cool in the book. And also, of course, the book is filled with thousands of, you know, Waters-isms that, I mean, the only one I can remember right now would be, you know, in humans it's an abortion, in chickens it's an omelette.
Well, that's a... That's an expression. That's what.
No,
I get.
You didn't make that one up.
No, that's a bumper sticker. Yeah,
not round these parts
yeah.
today.
And I like that. I thought up a skag hag. That's a girl that only likes to fuck junkies, and she says she's hot muff for the hard stuff, and gets mad at me because she says, "How come you can come out and we can't be strung out?" And I say, "Look, I'm sorry. I thought most junkies couldn't get it up." She said, "Some people like a soft penis." You know, so she's a militant skag hag. Yeah.
And you know, and again,
I don't think there is such a thing, but I invented it, right?
But it's satire, right?
Hopefully.
It's humor and it's satire. And then, of course, you are doing what you've always done, which is reporting to the rest of us back on some of your, you know, recent or not so recent findings at the in various genres, and one of them is Womb Raider novels.
Well, they're no true crime. Womb
true
raiders.
Crime. Tell us about those.
Womb Raiders are. There's many of cases of this of women that follow. They've told their husband they're pregnant. They're not. They fake pregnancy and then they follow pregnant women and cut out their baby and take it home and said, "I had it." This happens a lot. So be fearful, you know. And I think people should know about this, you know. And the last one, she cut it out with her car keys in the parking lot, you know. And so I think you should know, if you're pregnant, be careful.
Sure.
You know, someone might be following you with their car keys. So, and this is a small genre of books. There's only three so far, but it's growing.
Have you read them all?
I have all of them, yeah. Yeah. Hush, Hush, Sweet Baby, and I've Lullaby and Good Night. This happens a lot.
Because sometimes, you know, with your stuff...
And the baby lives. That's what's so scary, you know. And then they find the poor woman in the mall in her car. You know, it's really horrible. But this is about a librarian that brings books, the most appalling books to her readers, where that they can't get the lowest of the low.
And this is the good section.
And this is the genre. Yeah, oh, this is the woman I like. And The woman says, well, at the library, they say to me, there's no need to know about anything that ugly. And she said, well, yes, there is. There is a reason to know this, which I agree that the library should get you any book you ask for, which I think technically they will. Yeah.
How often are you mistaken for Steve Buscemi?
Well, that's an old joke, but it's true. Like flight attendants always say, you were good in Fargo. And and I told him this, of course, and he said, they think I'm Don Knotts. So, you know. And I had this is my favorite one. I was on a plane, and this woman kept looking at me. This was recently, and then finally she said, excuse me, are you a magician? And another flight attendant once said to me, I knew who you are, Ed Wood. I thought, Ed Wood? And I know what she meant. She got mixed up because Johnny Depp played Ed Wood. Right. Johnny Depp was in my movie. It was very, like, 6 degrees of separation. But I said, he's been dead for a long time. And at least she didn't say, I know. Yeah.
Deadwood.
Yeah.
Spaghetti straight until you get it.
Oh, that's
an
old queen used to say that. Yeah, like when you try to, this old queen and try to pick up straight guys and they'd say, I'm straight. And he'd say, like, so spaghetti till you get it heated up. And that's a line I have of a very scary character that's named Blossom, who's Blossom. Going around the country poisoning straight people because they do the electric slide.
One that got me good was "Don't ask, but I'm telling."
Yeah.
So tell us about there is one character in the real part of the book who recurs, and it's this character called the Corvette Kid.
Yeah.
You call him, who picks you up once and then reappears.
Yeah, he picked me up in Milersville, Maryland, somewhere in the pouring rain, and he was going to in his mother's Corvette to have lunch at the Subway sandwich shop. And he picked me up, and we just kept talking. He took me to Ohio, much to his parents' fear. And, you know, you Google me. It's not pretty if you're a parent. And then he came back, and we were just friends. He didn't know who I was. He'd never heard of my movies when I told him. He was a Republican elected official. But we just had a little adventure, and it was totally innocent. Then he kept texting me, and I'm going. I get stuck in Bonner Springs, Kansas. Never go there. And got stuck a couple times. So it was taking days, right? And then he kept saying, I'm going to come get you. And I thought he was kidding, really. And then I got a ride, a great ride, all through Kansas. And I texted him, said, I just got a big ride to Denver. He said, you're kidding. I've been driving 48 hours at 80 miles an hour to catch up with you. And I thought he was in the bedroom of his parents' house making this up, but he was, and he did catch up with me. And we had a great time. We went all the way to Reno together, and then I just gave him the keys to my apartment and said, just go stay in my apartment. I'm going to hitch more. And when his parents found out that he had come back, that he was gone back the second time, it was on the West Coast, they really freaked out. And he said, well, that's all right, I'm going to stay in John's apartment. And there was silence. And then his mother said, say out loud on the speakerphone what you just told me so your father can hear that. And then she was so paranoid once, and I don't blame her, I said, I'll talk to her. He said, no. And once she called me, picked up the phone, he said, what do you mean, who is it? It's your son. She thought I had got him in the trunk and was impersonating him or something. Yeah. But the worst was, then he had to drive all the way back by himself, which he stopped and helped tornado victims in Joplin, though. Right. And that. He was a great kid, and he's doing fine. I still see him. And we just had an adventure. I mean, his friends were texting him saying, way to go, you're here with a gay man in a motel in Reno. You know, but it was totally innocent. We had a bromance with no bro jobs. Yeah.
And he had some free time on his hands,
yeah,
and was happy to turn it into an adventure.
Who
wouldn't
want to do
that?
Who wouldn't want to do it? It was an adventure. Yeah, we had a great time. Although a carload of swingers, there was like a man and two women, and they were swingers. I think they were, hey, where are you going? And I went to the bathroom, and Brett gave him the Corvette Kid gave him his phone number, and they started texting him, let's meet up here. I thought, what are they looking for? You know, a five-way granddad-grandson sandwich? You know.
And And it's pretty wonderful that when you are looking to have, you know, when you took a little fame kit with you in case you got into trouble.
Well, my assistant made me a little fame kit, and I needed it once when the police stopped me. He was very nice. And he ran stuff for my warrants, and then I said, what are you doing? I showed him in it and my Directors Guild of America card, which I love. Excuse me, I have immunity here. No, I vote for the Oscars. You couldn't possibly arrest me. And he read it very seriously, author, and then said, doesn't say you're a professional hitchhiker. And then I said, well, then give me a ride. And he said, all right, get in. And he did. And he was great. But he said, I can only give you a ride in my county. I can't take you further, but I'll come back and see if you're okay. So I got stuck. I was there for like 4 hours. And I see him come back later, and he said, you're still here? Shake that sign. He was giving me grief because I wasn't good enough at hitchhiking. And I didn't want to shake it too much because then it looks like you just got out of prison and got a job as a banana on the side of the road. You know, I feel so bad for those people. Mr. Mattress, and you have to stand there. Oh, I feel so bad for them. And if they don't shake it, they're fired. That's why you see them always looking like they're insane doing it. Feel so bad for them. Right. They deserve a lot. Right. And if they went crazy and opened fire to the crowd, I'd understand.
And of course, this I don't know what people's questions will be about, but this interview, you know, this is about your book rather than your movies. But of course, you being you, your movies, and you being John Waters and, you know, looking like John Waters, people did spot you. They do, you know, your movies are in it. And one of the people who picks you up somewhat in the fictional section, in the good section, somewhat surprisingly, is Edith Massey. So
yeah,
tell us about that.
But she's still alive, and in it, and I find out where she's still alive and that she had faked her death. And it's a real fantasy because I dream a lot that Edith is still alive. Unfortunately, it is fiction. But yes, it was a fun chapter to write, to run into her again and what her life would be like today.
And she's kind of a selling used...
Well, she has... I don't want to give it all away, but she has a used to that sells like half-empty bottles of shampoo and... you know, toothpaste without the tube, you know, and like outdated prescription drugs.
It does have a, you know, it's a bit of a quest narrative, as it were, and it does have an idea of, you know, you mentioned reality TV.
Yeah, I hate reality TV, but this is like it.
It's a saleable concept.
And if I ever had been picked up by somebody that really did frighten me, what I was going to say was, you know, we're filming a reality show and there's a satellite shooting right now, but if you leave, they can't follow you, but they're shooting me. And it might have worked. Really, to say that to someone that was robbing you. But I never had that. I was never frightened of anybody. Every person was great. I just was frightened that it was going to take 2 years and I was still going to be in Ohio, you know, in the fall when I started in the summer.
And what was? And you also had with you, and not to give away all your tricks, but you had a kind of a device whereby, in case things went badly wrong,
well,
you could
I don't
be
think it
tracked.
Worked. My assistant made me get one of these spot things, that supposedly, like if you're in an avalanche, they can find you. Well, then I said, if it's for an avalanche, how come you said one day? I couldn't follow it the whole day. You have to have it in clear view, it says in the instructions. Well, what does that mean, in clear view in an avalanche? It's like bullshit, right? The BlackBerry tracked me better, you know, and the BlackBerry was my, and I'm old, I have a BlackBerry, but I love it because I never lost touch the whole way. It was my only thread to the real world, so I asked the BlackBerry to marry me in the middle of it, and it does. But the BlackBerry was better. That does the tracking advice too. It doesn't tell you exactly where you are. Like my assistant, it doesn't say he's at exit 32 at the corner of something. None of them are that good. But I almost got stuck a couple times. Once I said, I don't know why. I said to my assistant, find out, is there a gay bar? Call a gay bar. And she said, well, all right. She called back and said, it's called Excalibur. I love the name. But I never called them. What was I going to say? Gay brothers, come rescue me.
But you were, I mean, you know, it's you had the idea to write the book, you envisioned it being good or bad, but you never envisioned in the good or bad bits, like literally standing in the sun or the rain by the side of a road for, what was the maximum,
maybe 10 hours? One day, yeah. And
so you're just standing by a road with a sign looking, I mean, I understand the concept of hitchhiking.
The whining
was
really...
But that must be
really
dispiriting.
Yeah, well, and then I ran out of water, and I actually said to my assistant, today is the day I must drink my own urine. And then I had to walk back to that town and go, and I was like crackers and pink flamingos living in gas station lavatories and, you know, brushing my teeth in the Taco Bell. I thought, oh, this is the exact almost opposite of famous, I promise you, you know. And I only could think in the Taco Bell that Lana Turner's daughter told me that her mother was an early backer of Taco Bell. So I kept thinking, I hope Lana's estate gets a penny from this day that I'm in here. And people were not mean. They just, ignored me. And I would try to, I had this sign which would make people look away. And in one Holiday Inn, the woman said, if you flash that sign one more time to our guests, I'm calling the police. And I said, well, that man looked like he might have picked me up. She said, that was my husband. So, and another time I went in, I was late in the day, and I thought, there's no motels at this exit, and I didn't want to ever hitchhike at night, so I thought, I got to get a local ride, because they're the enemy usually, but to get a local ride, and I made a sign. I had to go get a new sign. I wanted to say Next Motel. So I went in this convenience shop, and I said, can I make a sign? She said, it's illegal to hitchhike on the freeway, I thought, you bitch. And I said, the policeman told me it was all right. I just made up a complete lie. And then she said, well, there's some cardboard out back. Help yourself. So I'm out there, and I made a sign, Next Motel, and I thought, wait a minute, that sounds like a hooker.
Right.
So I got classy and changed it to Next Hotel, even though there wasn't a hotel within 100 miles, I promise you. But I felt more secure with that sign.
Did you actually do a little prep work, any prep work, on kind of the etiquette or law of hitchhiking? In other words, being this side of a town isn't good because people are only
going... I didn't do that. But I hitchhiked anyway, even for about a couple of years before I left in Provincetown to this one beach I liked. And so I always did it. And I would ask people on hitchhiking dates to go to the beach, and we'd hitchhike. And it is a romantic date, I think. You ought to try it this summer. Want to go hitchhiking? I think it works. And so I had rehearsed a lot. What I didn't realize is that humor in a sign does not work. I had a sign that said, I'm not psycho. And everyone laughed, but no one stopped. I thought, wait a minute, my job is not to amuse traffic. Like I'm warming up a talk show. Right. And I had a sign that just said San Francisco in Baltimore. People just laughed. It's too far. So once I get one that just said I-70 West or something, it had to be far away so you get a ride that's going a long distance, but possible at least, not so far. And that worked better.
But you got some pretty long rides. Apart from your friend who picked you up for the second time, you actually had some pretty long rides. The fracking people took you quite a long way.
The fracking people, they were great. I know fracking's politically incorrect, but I think I'm a fracking hag now. They were not frackers. They were going to the fracking community to build temporary housing.
Right.
And they had done it in Iraq and war-torn countries, and they were chasing their pot of gold. And they all smoked pot the whole time, which was great. I didn't, because I couldn't imagine getting out and hitchhiking stoned where I didn't know where I was. But they were great. And they didn't know who I was, and they finally, when I told them I was in a Chucky movie, then they thought, oh, why didn't you say?
Isn't that funny? I was going to say that earlier. So what, your two big calling cards in the end were the ones that say you were Chucky and The Creeper.
Oh, I'm in The Creep. That documentary Lorca said, oh my God, you're in The Creep.
What is that? I didn't know what that was.
That's a music video with Nicki Minaj, and I play The Creep, and it's a dance where you do The Creep. And it has like so many hits. I mean, you'd be shocked how big it was. When I did that, I had no idea it was going to turn. But all young people know that. So, it helped. You never could tell what people would recognize you for, if they did at all. And some, they would say, oh yeah, that's nice. They didn't care about it, really. It wasn't impressive, which was very nice, I thought. I wanted to hear their story. It was their book, not mine.
We're going to open it out for questions, and there will be microphones, coming down each aisle. Let's try and keep the questions themselves quite concise, because I feel there's going to be quite a few of them.
And, well, you never know that. Right.
Let's kick it off somebody on this side. Here's one right here. There you go. There's someone over there.
So the only movie I've seen you in recently is Excision, which I really loved.
Thank you. Thank you. With Tracy Lords.
Great supporting cast as well.
It's not a porn movie.
I was wondering if you had any more film projects, anything that you were writing or directing, or anything.
Well,
that
I'm just finished
acting in coming in the future.
Acting in. Well, the book is the newest thing that just came out two weeks ago, so that's what I'm on. Then it comes out in Europe in the fall. I do have movie projects I'm always trying to get made that haven't gotten made. I have a TV show that just fell through. So, I mean, it's I don't talk about projects that haven't happened yet because it's like if you're trying to get pregnant, you don't tell people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I have many things in development that are coming, yes. So, yes, I have. We'll see which ones become real.
Cool.
Excuse me. Acting, I just do that for fame maintenance, really. You know.
Well, I thought you were really great in the film.
I do that once in a while. It's not like I have a go to auditions or anything, you know.
And of course, one of the first chapter of the imaginary good part of the book is you meet somebody who just says, "I've got all this tax free income from growing
from
pot.
Here's $5 million.
Make
would
a
you
movie.
Like it? And here we don't take notes. No notes were given you, and we don't have to pay it back. And you know, and they own a corrupt FedEx office that is in, really the guy looks there, the works there kind of looks like he was released from a Whole Foods employee jail. You know that look.
If you were to be picked up by any character, not an actor from one of your movies, who would you ideally want it to be?
Well, ideally picked up, you know, in the book, I fall in love. Somebody picks me up and he's a knife salesman, a door-to-door butcher knife salesman. In real life, I dated an unsuccessful door-to-door knife salesman. This one was successful. That was the difference. And when I always thought, who's going to let you in the house? Like, who is it? I'm selling butcher knives? Oh, come in. So I guess it would be him. He's the last chapter in The Good Rides. And I see his name on a bathroom wall, and I think, oh, should I call? And then he says, oh, I've been sitting here for 2 years waiting for somebody to call.
There's a great bit in the bad section of the book where you're left by someone, and you write, she peels out, spraying my awful cut and bleeding body with gravel, whereas when the man you fall in love with leaves, you say, give my love to the Simpsons, he shouts good-naturedly, then peels out in his truck perfectly, so the gravel shoots up all around me, but not on me.
Well, it can go two different ways of dramatic exit.
Who was next?
Thank you. I got tickets for this event at a silent auction for the first LGBT friendly senior apartments here in the city, and the big sold out tickets, John Waters, and an autographed playbill for Crybaby.
Right, there was a flop. Right, so that's rare.
And the first thing somebody said to me was, "If you put that on eBay, you'll make a bunch of money."
I don't know if you make a bunch of money on eBay on anything
these days, right? My only question is, even though I haven't been in Provincetown in 10 years, and we can talk about that later, where is Excalibur? What city or where is the gay bar Excalibur? I want to know where
that
is.
Where is what?
Excalibur. You said your
Excalibur. It was in, what's that, Fort Hood? Like it was in, what's after Kansas?
California.
No. It was in an army community, and I forget. I have to look in the book where it was, but it was in the West, and it was a giant, you know, town that was all soldiers. I mean, there were military tanks going by when I was hitchhiking, and I prayed would pick me up. That would be a glamorous ride, right? But they didn't. But Excalibur was there. Yes, it was the name of the bar. So you can find it. You can look up in the book, and it'll tell you where it is. Go there. I never called them. Thank you.
There's one just there.
So do you pick up hitchhikers yourself, either before or after this?
Not recently, I haven't seen one, and there was only one we saw driving across the country, and I told the crew, don't pick him up, you know. I said, I'm not a communist hitchhiker, I don't share. But I did pick up, only one I can think of was maybe 5 years ago in Baltimore, it was in the daytime, and he got in the car and started huffing glue. He said, want some? I thought, well, he's polite. He offered me some. And I said, well, not on Tuesday morning, maybe on Friday or something, you know. But I was shocked that he did it. And he was perfectly normal. But he was really like, this bag. I thought, Jesus Christ. Make yourself comfortable. Right. I mean, that was my last experience. It was okay. That didn't stop me. Yeah.
Hands.
I did meet people on the tour, though. A lot of radio shows I do, people call in about their hitchhiking experiences. And one picked up a hitchhiker, and they got married, and they've been together for 42 years. So, you know, no one called up and said, oh, yeah, both my arms were cut off by one. I didn't get anybody like that.
Like you already said, the first story was about having somebody give you money to go make your movies and stuff like that. With crowdfunding becoming a bigger thing today and more people going to that, have you ever thought about crowdfunding?
No, I haven't. He's talking about Kickstarter. I own 4 homes. Am I going to beg? It doesn't seem right to me. Yeah. The same way when Occupy Baltimore said, come down, said, I get why you're here. I had fun doing that too, on drugs, rioting. I had a great time doing that in the 60s. But I can't be that hypocritical to come down here. And I'm for it. But at the same time, I am a capitalist. You know, there are some good cats. There's asshole poor people too, you know? If there weren't for some good rich people, we wouldn't have. Who would buy art? Who would back movies? You got to find the good ones, right? No.
The microphone is just going right back to there.
Hi. From reading your books, I gather that you're kind of a collector, so I'm wondering if you've ever had a yard sale, or if not, what a John Waters yard sale would be like.
I've never had a yard sale because I don't want people, you know, looking at my stuff. There is a bookstore in Baltimore books that I don't want that people send me. I trade for, you know, not for money, but for trade-in, called Normal's Books, which is a great bookshop. I do go book shopping all the time. I mean, Atomic Books, where I had the signing last night in Baltimore, is a great bookshop. I get all the fan mail there. It was even an answer on Jeopardy recently, which I think they liked. So I do collect books, and I do collect non-collectible books, like the porn parody softcore books and stuff I collect. And there's a whole chapter in this book about a librarian that specializes that. And I do own all the books that I talk about in there. So I collect all kinds of books. I'm actually reading now My Struggle, the 6th right. volume, and it's really good. It's a page turner. Good thing it's 3,800 pages long. It's really good, though. I would recommend reading it. I'm only on volume 2.
There's another hand back there. Knausgaard, is that his name?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Knausgaard.
Yeah.
Absent the barely functioning GPS thing, did you have a backup plan if anything went crazy?
Well, I said in the beginning I wasn't going to torture myself. I mean, I had a credit card. I could have, I guess, booked a helicopter to come get me, you know. But that was my backup plan, yeah.
That's a good backup plan.
Yeah. But all I had with me was 2 credit cards, about $200, 1 key. I didn't want to have to replace anything in case I got robbed. You really didn't need a lot of stuff. I took 5 pair of underwear, so I could, my worst pair, so I could throw them away every day, so I could shed weight.
Thank you. You used to file, well, I guess you still probably file a lot of trials. Do you have a trial that's going on now that you like? Or
I don't really go to trials anymore, A, because I get recognized. The jury, if they hate me, will take it out on them. And people think I'm making a movie about it. And I've changed a little bit. I mean, I teach in prison sometimes. I work with prisoners. So, but I do follow it, certainly. I guess the lawyer I'm, if I wasn't this, I would be a defense lawyer for the despised, the damned, and the depraved. You know, my kind of, I'm most interested in the woman lawyer, I forget her name, who handled the Batman killer. She handled the congressman shooter, and she's doing the Boston bomber. Because her goal is, if she gets you life without parole and not death, she won. And that's the kind of lawyer that's amazing to me. And her strategy is that she never talks to the press, and her client never talks to the press. And to be honest, her track record is not bad for getting life without parole. So I'm fascinated by somebody that deals with the most despised people. And, you know, when Casey Anthony, who I guess is the most hated woman in America still, but I was glad when she got off. I don't know if she did it or not, but I always want Nancy Grace's head to explode. And I thought that almost happened. Yeah.
Have you thought of trying to contact the people who picked you up to have a little get-together?
Well, I have contacted the people. Some of them, I've seen the Corvette Kid, I've seen Here We Go Magic, I've seen the Kansas couple, I've written to the Marine woman with Antrax. Some of them, I don't know where they are. Only one guy I forgot to give. I had a fan, for some reason, years ago, sent me these embossed little cards with a thumb that said, thank you for the lift, before I even did this book or anything. So I found them in my studio, so I took them with me and signed them, and everybody that gave me a ride, I gave one to, but there was one kid in it in Kansas that worked at a Walmart that I forgot to give it to. And I went back to Lawrence, Kansas because I was the speaker at William Burroughs' 100th birthday party last year. And I thought maybe he'd come. And I said to him to speak, I got your card if you're here, but he wasn't there. He didn't come. So I don't know how to reach most of them, really. But the people you stayed in the car the longest with are the people you eventually traded information with. And all those I have been in contact with, yes. So it would be nice to have a reunion. Yes, the Here We Go Magic, I had a dinner party for them. We've stayed in touch.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I've been trying to follow you down every time I try to see you. Glad I got to make it here.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think.
My name's Blaze Waters. I did a family tree. I have it with me for being a relative of yours and stuff, and I've always followed you and stuff. And what I wanted to know about was, like, with Divine, what was the craziest thing she ever did?
Well, you know, Divine wasn't a she. Divine never dressed as a woman except in the movies, really. He was a man. He didn't want to be a woman. He called it his work clothes. The craziest thing Divine ever did. That's good, because Divine was a major pothead. I'll tell you, how he smuggled pot all around the world is in his suitcase, he had a cheater. That's a fake vagina he wore. But he would have that on the top of his carry-on luggage with a pot right under it, and the customs would open it, look at that cheater and his fake tits, and just shut it. They weren't looking through that. It works. And a cheater. And then another thing I always said that freaking out for me when I was traveling, I do a Christmas show, and I said I wanted a flapper. What do they call it? A flapper. I didn't know what they were. This is a limp dick dildo that some women wear to show a suggestion of a basket. And I never knew about that. So this girl said, I got one on. You want it? I said, well, sure. And she took it out and gave it to me. And then I thought, well, I can't have this in my carry-on luggage. What gay man travels with a limp dick dildo? I would be arrested in a minute.
What do you reckon Divine might be doing in the year 2014?
Divine would have been maybe a huge success the night before, the night after Divine died. He was supposed to start the first day of the shoot of Married with Children, and he was going to play the male gay uncle. And it was really the first maybe gay character on a big hit sitcom that probably would have been very successful.
I remember him in an Alan Rudolph movie.
Yes, that was
which he played
movie.
Illy Blue
he
in.
He played a gangster.
Really
yeah.
nice. He played a gangster. Yeah. I remember a scene with a Lazy Susan yeah. in it or something like that.
And, you know, the graveyard where he lives, we all bought plots there. I bought one, Mink Stole. We're all going to be buried there. We call it Disgrace Land.
Another gentleman was asking you regarding possible future endeavors. But with this book, you know, it being kind of off the beaten path for you, would you ever consider maybe a semi-autobiographical film of that? And would you have Steve Buscemi play you, perhaps?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear it.
A semi-autobiographical
film?
Well,
wrote the book Shock Value, which certainly is autobiographical about the early years. And there is interest in that for a movie. We'll see if that happens. Who knows? That's silence.
There's one over there. Well, while we get there, how did the Divine dressing up in women's clothes then come to be the thing that was? Because you just knew him as an outrageous local character.
Well,
right?
But no, he wasn't outrageous. I knew him as the overweight neighbor that got beat up in school every day for being feminine. You know, he was really a victim of bullying, even by the teachers. And he used that rage, I think, later. We invented this character that was Godzilla and Jane Mansfield put together to scare hippies. Really, that was the point. And, of course, Philadelphia was one of the biggest cities ever for me, then the beginning of my career at the TLA Cinema and everything. So it was very, very important. The city has always been very, very important to me for everything I've done. And so that's how it kind of started. And then Divine played this role that people were frightened of him. But then when he turned it around in Polyester and played an alcoholic housewife, or in Hairspray playing a regular mother, that's when he started to get very, very good reviews. And it's a shame because he was... And then also he had this techno music career before anybody, sure. really, techno music. And those songs were hits. And my favorite was the cover of The Sun, I think, in London, one of the tabloids. It was just a picture of Divine when his record was number one. And the headline was, ugh, E-C-H-H-S. And the subtitle was, You Thought Boy George Was Bad.
Who was up there? There we go.
Okay, so it seems like you've mostly been interested in despicable people, you said? Or
they aren't despicable, you know, to me. I'm interested in people that have what others think is a disadvantage and turn it into a style. I'm interested in people that have had more extreme lives than me. That's good or bad. That's what Role Models was really about.
Right, and then it seems like most people are less extreme. Are you now kind of interested in normal people?
Well, I don't know that I seek that. I'm interested in people that think they're normal but are insane and don't think so. That's really what I watch for the most. And Baltimore is filled with people like that. I mean, you come to Baltimore and you see, my films are documentaries. People say, oh my God, everyone looks exactly like your movies on the corner. I don't know if you have it here in Baltimore, everybody dances at bus stops. I don't know why. Like, even in the worst neighborhoods, they're waiting for the bus, but they're dancing.
What about the, there's a question over there, but what about the, you know, you previously were the most notable kind of Baltimore film thing. It's since when The Wire more recently.
The Wire is great. Wherever I go in the whole world, the smartest person in every room says, I love The Wire. It's the first thing they bring up.
Right.
And of course, the politicians there hate The Wire because they think, but, you know, I told the governor I was in Japan and they had a map of Baltimore and the only markings on it was where people were killed on The Wire and where Divine ate dog shit. And I said, not everybody likes tall ships, really, you know? We have all kinds of people that like Baltimore for different reasons. We have to, and I used to make this joke that the Chamber of Commerce should put out a bumper sticker saying, come to Baltimore and be shocked, and they finally did. And then people would say, you have a bumper sticker that says, come to Baltimore and be shot? I said, no, we're not that liberal. Right. But do you have we brotherly love this city. We always have these slogans that always go bad. Charm City became Harm City. The city that reads, that bleeds, they change it. And then they had Believe and they changed it to Be Evil. You know, you can't come up with these slogans. They always backfire, right.
But I mean, you have been one of Baltimore's most notable exports for years and years and years.
And they've always been nice. Mayor Schaefer, the governor, always used to say, I don't care what they're like, just keep making them here. You know, this was before Hairspray, when they were kind of disreputable. I don't care.
Let's have a couple more questions, Andy. What do you think?
First, thanks for bringing us...
Two more questions.
Thanks for bringing us great joy with all of the films over the years.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. And thank you for appreciating it. You know, I've had a long career. It's 50 years since I first started doing this. And I've been understood. It's not like somebody like, oh, nobody ever got it. People got it. And you know, this book I just found out yesterday, next week is number 12 on the New York Times bestseller list, which is a shock to me, you know? So it's not like people aren't getting it. Yeah, and I think people's taste has changed. I think people are much more open to humor and to listen to other things. You can't change anybody's mind if you start ranting and raving, but if you make people laugh, they'll listen. And I think that's always been kind of what I've tried to do.
Will there be an audiobook version?
There is. Oh, it's already out.
And who's are you the reader?
I'm the reader. And I remember reading it out loud. I thought, oh, this is so fucked up when I'm saying it out loud. And I would look over when I have a magic asshole in one part, and I'd look over at the startled technician.
How many...
What I'm reading.
Hello.
And then
at lunch, they sat at a different table.
And all the technician ever really said, I just did one, all the technician really says is, we'll have to do that bit again. I could hear you turning the page.
Yeah. Well, I always know people when they're uptight, they always say, it was interesting. That means I hated it.
Right. Well, let's move on to what is going to be the last question of the evening. And I think it's back there against that wall over on the left.
First of all, thanks so much for coming to Philadelphia. The question I wanted to ask was, when did you first get a taste of becoming mainstream or being accepted? What was that first?
Well, it was always accepted by some, but I would think polyester because it was right after video came out. And I recognized as soon as video came out that the midnight movie was over because everybody could have their own midnight movie at home and smoke pot and watch movies. So I made a movie that could play certainly in art houses that didn't have to be at midnight. But it had Tab Hunter in it, where I used a Hollywood star, and I also had the Odorama joke, which really did work. And it really worked because Tab Hunter was in it. And I think that was the first thing that changed. And then when Hairspray came out, you know, my career was like up and down always. I mean, my last movie, I had censorship problems, and it didn't do that well. A Dirty Shame. So I never knew which one was going to work. When I wrote Hairspray, I never thought that it was going to go on to, you know, buy me an apartment in San Francisco. But Hairspray is the gift that keeps on giving, and it's amazing to me though. Now it's in every high school, but I always said, "Oh, the fat girl and the drag queen gets the part finally." But because of political correctness, that's not true. They can't cast by race or anything. So I've seen Hairspray very curiously, where Tracy is played by a skinny black girl. It really doesn't make a lot of sense, the plot. So I think the politically correct version of Hairspray eventually will, every sex is played by the opposite and every single race that there is in your city with no anything about the plot. And then we'll have the transgressive, new, politically correct version of Hairspray.
Ladies and gentlemen, please will you thank you Filth Elder John Waters.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.